I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
We are in a fifth generational conflict.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
I don't think, despite all of the deniers, there's any doubt that he interfered in our election, or that he has interfered in many ways in internal affairs of other countries.
The aid that we are giving them is critical. If this was to stop, they would lose and Putin would win. So I am, motivated to get this done.
Invited by House Speaker Anthony Rota to witness Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's address to Parliament, Yaroslav Hunka is one of his constituents. Now new details have emerged about that war service MPs applauded. Hunka served in the 1st Galician Division, a voluntary unit commanded by the Nazis.
They have drones at our rallies. Can you imagine this? This is like Orwell 1984. Why are drones spying on people who are practicing our First Amendment right of free speech, and then they make mass arrests of us?
So I'm running again, and you may have noticed a lot of people are focused on my age. When I came to office, this nation was flat on its back. I knew what to do. I vaccinated the nation and rebuilt the economy.
Trump with a 9-point lead over President Biden in that poll, and whatever caveats, whether that is an outlier, that's a tough one to spin.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition, Human Events Daily with Jack Posobiec. Today is September 25th, 2023, Anno Domini, and Justin Trudeau is praising the Waffen SS along with Vladimir Zelensky. You see, because we were told that it was Russian propaganda that Zelensky and the Ukrainian regime were some sort of Nazified extremist group. But it turns out that after Zelensky's people put me on a hit list, then the ADL came out and said that turns out the Azov Battalion isn't an extremist organization anymore, and they're perfectly fine now. They've made some changes, shifted some personnel around. They're really firing on all cylinders now. We love the Azov Battalion. That's what the ADL said recently. Then the media comes out and says, well, the president of Ukraine and the prime minister of Canada praised a World War II veteran. World War II veteran of the 1st Ukrainian Division. Now, if you know anything about that little word called history, you might know that Ukraine as a country didn't exist in World War II because it was part of the Soviet Union. However, what did exist were breakaway regions and breakaway people, such as the Ukrainians, that joined up with other militaries that happened to be operating in the area, shall we say. Yeah, that's right. So the 1st Ukrainian Division was actually a volunteer division of the Waffen-SS. By the way, Poland never had any volunteer divisions of the Waffen-SS, even though they were occupied by Nazi Germany. You do the math. One of the main things that Ukrainian nationalists were doing during World War II and during this period were genociding Poles and ethnic cleansing thousands of Poles, including children, even Polish babies that lived in the areas of Galicia. Targeted Poles, targeted Jews. And yet, weird it's believe that the Canadian government just made a little bit of a whoopsie-daisy and went and praised the Waffen-SS. So Trudeau is out there apologizing. We're so sorry, we didn't mean to. But I'm confused. Because I was told that all of this was a Russian disinformation plot, that none of it could be true, that none of it could be real, that Zelensky would show support for a group like the Waffen-SS. And yet when I traveled to Western Ukraine, I saw statues of Ukrainian nationalists like Stepan Bandera that participated in the atrocities and war crimes I just spoke of. Genocide of Jews, genocide against Poles. And we're to believe that all of this is totally fine now, you see, because they're all against Russia, and that's the only thing you should worry about. We've always been at war with East Asia. War is peace. Slavery is freedom. Men are women. And Ukraine doesn't support Nazis. We've got a big show for you today, folks, so stay tuned. But remember, you get put on a hit list if you say that Ukraine bombed civilians in Donetsk or the U.S. bombed Nord Stream. But when Zelensky goes and does this, it's perfectly fine. And the media and the ADL shut up. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode. And we're putting them out every single day of the week.
When I grew up in the hood, I rolled with bloods. And them boys had a saying. Can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
And we're back, Jack Posobiec here, Human Events Daily. Folks, there's a lot to be nervous about out there. You open social media or turn on the news any night and all you'll see is crime, societal decay. A lot of people just run out and buy a gun and then it sits in a safe. And if there's ever an emergency, they're not going to be prepared to use it, and they run the risk of hurting themselves or others. Remember that illegal alien got loose in Pennsylvania? Guy took 7 shots at him in his own garage, didn't hit him. You see, unfortunately, it's time-consuming to go to the range, assuming there's even one nearby. Ammo prices are through the roof. I get it. That's why today's sponsor is iTarget. iTarget was invented so that you could practice anytime, anywhere, in the safety and in the convenience of your own home. Simply download the iTarget Pro app, load your caliber-specific laser bullet into your firearm, and start training. Practice alone, compete with friends, or use it to safely train friends and family who are new to firearms. Go to itargetpro.com and get 10% off at checkout when you use promo code POSO. This is the smartest, safest way to train, which is why competitive shooters trust dry fire training as part of their regimen. Get yours today. That's letter I, targetpro.com, itargetpro.com, promo code POSO. All right. Now, over the weekend, there was this incredibly controversial poll released by the Washington Post and ABC News. And the big question that I saw all of Never Trump and then all of the left screaming from the top of their lungs saying, this poll's not real, it's an outlier, don't believe it, don't believe the hype. The Washington Post didn't, by the way, put this 10-point split in their headline. They buried it 3 paragraphs down. Then you also see that independents up 13%. Well, to break this down and really answer the question of what's going on here, we've got Richard Barris, the People's Pundit, to break it down for us like none other. Rich, what's the story here? Work or shoot? Should we believe this poll?
Thanks for having me, Jack, as always. You never dismiss any polls. And we can go through, some are obviously going to be wrong and some are going to be outliers, Jack. But I'm glad we have enough time to go over it today because, I mean, I can explain why the ABC News, Washington Post poll is a bit of an outlier. By the way, just today, there's 2 more polls that were released. One is Trump plus 5. The other one's going to be Trump plus 3 when it's released. So, you know, the averages are starting to, show a Trump trend. That's really, it could be that ABC News is in front of it a little bit. look, we just polled a few weeks ago. We're getting ready to poll nationally again for a monthly. And we had Trump up by one. So, I mean, it's a big lead. But again, our methodology is different. And ABC News, Washington Post, if I have time to go over it, there's a reason. This is the pollster that came out with Biden plus 17 in Wisconsin. This is the pollster that came out with Biden plus 12, their final national. Hillary Clinton plus 12, their final national. None of those critics said, made a peep, Jack, when those polls were released. By the way, Biden won Wisconsin by 0.2 percentage point. That's it. But there is something with their methodology that sometimes it works out and sometimes it does not. At the presidential level, it can get away from you if you don't address it. And he cites it right in the methodology statement, in the polling memo. He does make very clear, Langer himself, why the poll could be a little bit of an outlier at this point. And I can get into that if you want.
Yeah, let's do that, because I do think people want to understand this. So there's getting this, they're yes. getting this signal, essentially, and a poll is signal, and I want people to understand that. So a poll is signal based on a grouping of people that you've brought together. But of course, everybody questions, well, what's the methodology of the poll? Because how can you take a couple of hundred people and then extrapolate that out to mean the entire country? Because what happens if you're weighted? What happens if the bias is off? It's skewed, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really what we're getting into when we question the methodology. So what did they use here and how do you read it?
This is, let me also say this on sampling sizes, because you just brought that up. This is a debate that's been going on for a long time. Personally, I have implemented minimum sample sizes for both national polls and state level polls, depending on the size of the state's population. I personally do not like polling 800 people for a national poll. We do at least 2,000 registered voters, but buried right in his memo, Jack, is something that is makes the Washington Post poll different than others. And that is, this early, even though it's being reported that they are registered voters, this isn't deduped or a data appended against a voter file. This is random digital dial that is being they're taking self-reported registration on face value. They're taking the word of the person they're talking to. Why does that matter? Normally, that would help Democrats, and that's why we've seen this poll grossly overstate Democrat support in the past. Here's why things are different this year, all right? Trump leads with non-registered adults by upwards, I mean, it depends, premise data, and we find it anywhere between 15, 20 points sometimes. That is
and
not
this
normal.
Is premise data?
Yeah, I just cited premise data because they're very close to what we find. Trump will lead somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 points with people who are not really registered to vote, which, by the way, is an opportunity for Republicans. They should get off their butts and do something about it while they have Trump still as their standard bearer. But that's another conversation.
Scott Pressler.
And USA Today. Yeah, absolutely. David Paleogos at USA Today just wrote two columns about the unlikely voter poll. They've been doing this for years. It was roughly even, a little edge for Biden in 2020, back when Obama was running against Romney. Obama was crushing him 2-1, 3-1 with these unlikely people. These are people who are registered as well, but they're unlikely. And most of the other pollsters that you see in the Real Club Politics average right now are screening out both those groups, Jack. The ABC News Washington Post poll is not. So that's why you're seeing one of the big things people went over is the younger crowd. You know, Trump is ahead with 18 to 35. 18 to 35 is not young. That's why larger sample size matter. 18 to 24 is young. 25 to 29. When you get in the 30s, something changes with voters. They start to lean a lot less Democratic. So if you had those unlikely, even non-registered, and they're lying to you, a bunch of them in that sample, because sampling errors for subgroups are higher, especially that subgroup 18 to 35, you know, you could see a lead for Trump that's like 10 points, but the sampling error for that subgroup is plus or minus 15 or 13. So, you know, at the end of the day, it does show movement to Trump. And that's why you should not dismiss it, because the methodology has not changed. 4 years ago, 5 years ago, even God, going on, 8 years ago now, this poll was very unfriendly to Trump for the reasons I am, explaining right now. However, things have changed. For the first time in my modern, first time in my life, modern memory, Republicans especially Donald Trump, because actually Ron DeSantis only leads with by two points with that other voter group I was telling you about. Trump leads by like 20. I've never seen this in my lifetime. Jack, it's very, very important. I've been trying to beat it like a dead horse over and over again. Normally, Republicans are hoping for low turnout. They don't want these other people to show up. They're biting their nails. God, I hope this many of, this group didn't vote. They don't have to worry about that now. In fact, their concern should be the exact opposite, going and getting those people. Because to me, what the ABC News poll shows is that if Republicans put together an infrastructure and go get those people under the flag of Donald Trump, they could blow Democrats out of the water this year. This is what it's so frustrating that I say the same things over and over again, brother, but that's really what everyone should be taking away from this poll.
So you're actually saying that in all of this, right, there is huge signal, boil it all down, and we could say 10 points, maybe 5 points, Harris, Harvard is coming out with a 5-point up poll. Yeah. Trump has never shown leads like this. Even going back to 2016, never shown leads like this in polling, never in national polling, never in corporate polling. A lot of this is incorporating that all adult, which includes non-registered adults in polling. And there's a possibility that he could absolutely trounce, because of course we're talking about national polls. If you're up 10 there, then the real question is what's going on in the battleground states. And by the way, just on a personal basis, and I know I've been getting comments about that people are saying, I can't wait for Rich to drop his next Rust Belt poll.
I know, I'm dying to do it too. It's coming, guys. It's coming. It really is. And this is why we've also tried to show not just typical top line results in the polls that we've been releasing. And we're going to do this with the Rust Belt too, because the last poll we did, the Rust Belt poll we didn't start to do this yet. So I'm excited to get into it and add the different potential electorates that could show up, Jack, because again, going back to 16, going back to 20, Trump is now hitting or above 50 in major media polls. All right. That never happened. Ladies and gentlemen, never happened. And the reason he's so strong in this poll, for instance, just to give you a margin, Premise had the non-register, Trump was up by 20. The USA Today, the non-registered Trump was up about, 17 points. But that increased about 5 more points when you looked at people who were registered but are just unlikely.
Which, by the way, said, of all people, that this may be something where the Pennsylvania Automatic Registration Act that Shapiro was pushing might actually help Trump, which is counterintuitive. But then I saw you and Scott Pressler both zeroing in that because it's tracking a lot of these voters that we're talking about, hunters, yes, workers, people out in Western Pennsylvania that may not necessarily be already registered. The Democrats are already registering everyone in the cities. This is targeting people that may not be within those Democrat sweeps. Is it possible that those pushes actually help Trump in Pennsylvania?
They do.
And just quick yes or no, because we're coming up right on a break.
Yes, it is very possible. Yes.
Wow. Shapiro, the Democrat, may have accidentally just helped Trump with his new automatic registration act. Stay tuned, folks, because there's a lot going on. We're sifting through the data, and we've got Richard Barris to go through all of it with us. Trump is now polling above the margin of fraud.
Today, they talk about influencers. These are influencers, and they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec, we're back here at Cuman Events Daily. Folks, if you think I'm powered and energized a little bit today, that's because this morning and every morning, I am powered by today's episode sponsor, blackoutcoffee.com. You can be powered this much as well. You just go to blackoutcoffee.com. You lock in promo code POSO20. They've got seasonal roasts. We know we're going into fall. Winter's right around the corner. That's right. Winter is coming. Do you want your winter, all right? Do you want to have a white Christmas, or do you want to have full-on blackout with the energy that you need to put yourself through every single day. Go to promo code POSO20. You can get your subscription in 3 bags a month, 4 bags a month. You will love it. But make sure you get your order today and use that promo code POSO20 for 20% off your full order. Breaking it back down now with Richard Barris. Rich, I said after, on our way to the break just now that Trump is polling ahead of the margin of fraud. Explain for the audience what that means, and especially as pertains to a state like Pennsylvania.
It means that they can do whatever trick they have up their sleeve, but eventually there's a finite amount of ballots, Jack, and if you win if you win by a margin large enough, there's not a whole lot they can do. I mean, to make the math really simple, there's only so much they can play around with, Jack, before, I mean, it just gets ridiculous. I mean, there's a certain number of people who are registered to vote, and then there are percentages of them that actually do, and then there are unrealistic percentages, which is, I think, what they're looking at. They know at this moment, when it comes to auto voter registration, what they know is that Trump is polling stronger than he was in 16 and 20. They were already nervous in 20 that he was going to, you know, get a boost similar to 16 and catch them off guard. Now they're facing something that's totally different. And as it stands right now in a state like Pennsylvania, status quo, and I know people are looking at 22 and they're thinking, oh, the state's out of reach. It's not for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is very different than everybody else. He's very different than, you know, Mehmet Oz. I mean, it's a total different animal. And, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to be nice here. But the fact is, Trump is, that's his wheelhouse, are these Rust Belt states and his mid-Atlantic areas. And there, Shapiro, by him doing this, is signal to me that the status quo is too risky for them. They're just more confident in their ability to go out and get those new voters, and they're not at all confident in the Republican ability to do that, because Republicans, as of now, don't have one, especially in a state like Pennsylvania. So just real quick to use an example. I went into the database when this happened, and I immediately identified a block of 300,000 eligible but not registered voters, very simple demographic sweep in there. About 200,000 of them were pegged to be more friendly to the Republicans, you know, more likely Trump supporters, and 100,000 were for Democrats. They know that. What I'm saying is this. They were willing to take that risk because of how the position they're in now is poor. They're willing to take that risk because they're confident that they'll go out and get their 100,000, but Republicans won't go and get their 200,000. So, and they have every reason to believe that, because Republicans are too busy spending $100 million a quarter trying to defeat the guy who's the only one who can bring these voters to the polls anyway. So if you're Josh Shapiro, you're chuckling and you're going to do this, even though there's a risk. And I would point to people, New Jersey. Now, bill was signed in 2018. It really got underway in the last couple of cycles. And ever since they did, New Jersey has seen a lot of the inactive crap fall off their records. And Republicans have gained, you know, and the state has shifted to the right slightly. And that's without any effort at all, Jack, without any effort at all. So imagine if there was an effort. Shapiro's going to put 20 million.
You're also seeing a huge push in Pennsylvania, this consolidation behind Dave McCormick, who's running for Pennsylvania Senate. He'll be going up against Bob Casey, who is incredibly formidable because of his name.
Yes,
and a lot of people associate him with his father. They assume he's his father, even though he's not. And he's certainly not had the voting record.
No.
And then in Pennsylvania's other Senate seat, we have a lumbering cyclops known as John Fetterman, the slob, really the sloth. We call him Giant Sloth. And, you know, people think that they've seen new footage of Bigfoot stomping through the halls of Congress. No, no, that's actually just our other senator,
just John
Fetterman. But Rich, let's go through some of this other information, because so you're talking about states of Pennsylvania being put at play. Wisconsin bans drop boxes. Wisconsin's got this Rust Belt vote. But here's the thing. I keep hearing people tell me, you say candidate not like Mehmet Oz, right? I keep hearing Never Trump tell me that Donald Trump can't win the general election. And yet I never hear any of them tell me how a non-Trump candidate plans to actually win the Rust Belt. How does a non-Trump candidate win in a state like Pennsylvania? How does he win anywhere? Or she, fine, we'll say she, because we'll be equitable to Miss Nikki Haley. How do any of them actually plan to win the Rust Belt?
I actually asked the editor-in-chief at Town Hall about that last night. And what he responded with is very concerning. He picked Wisconsin. I said, which Rust Belt state? Tell me which one Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley are going to win. Here's their very serious delusion that they need to get over right now. Because Donald Trump won Wisconsin, because Donald Trump won Michigan, because Donald Trump won Pennsylvania and damn near won them all again in 2020, does not mean you can't. I have gone over the maps of Wisconsin, which they very clearly think is the easiest target. I have gone over the maps, Jack, since 1980, over and over. You could take Reagan's map in Wisconsin and overlay it with Donald Trump's map in 16 and with the exception of a few counties in 2020. Very similar. Yet, when you look at other Republican performance at the presidential level, at the Supreme Court statewide level, they get romped. And the reason is they cannot win in these areas where some of these voters that I was just talking to you about exist and rarely vote unless somebody like Donald Trump comes out. And by the way, more than 10 to 1, when you ask those voters in those surveys that we were talking about, who would you come out and vote for, even though you're not a likely vote? Who would you? 10 to 1, they cite Donald Trump. It's not even close. There are simply not enough suburban votes that they're going to swing to Haley or DeSantis to outdo getting killed in Douglas, in Bayfield, in Ashton, up in what we call lumberjack country. They're going to get slaughtered there. They're still not going to win Racine by a larger margin like they think. They're still not going to win Kenosha by a larger margin. I don't know. Like, this isn't a debate. I'm showing map after map after map. They're making the same flawed, illogical argument we heard Democrats make after Obama, who won Indiana and darn near won Missouri. And moving forward, you heard it in 2016 and 2020, Jack. Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden both could win Indiana. They can both in a state like Missouri. And at the end of the day, what happened? Trump romped them in both of those states. So they were trying to apply the Obama principle to other people. And that is now what Never Trump is trying to do when it comes to the Rust Belt, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. They have, look at me, zero chance. All right, not 0.1, 0.15, 0.2, 10, zero chance of winning those states, any one of them, zero.
And it's as simple because we don't, and this, by the way, this isn't your opinion. We saw this in the data. We saw this when Romney Ryan went up there. That's Wisconsin. It's Paul Ryan's home state, and he got slaughtered up. And I love how you put this. You called it the Western Lumberjack, northwestern part of Wisconsin, Lumberjack, Wisconsin, that Ryan just gets slaughtered. What is it about that part of the state that can make them swing for Obama and then back to Trump?
Yeah, that's a great question. They don't like politicians. These are normies. No matter how much you try to sell a candidate as, you know, Trump and the MAGA without the baggage and the negativity, maybe to more traditional voters, some of that is negative when it comes to Donald Trump. But they're going to vote anyway. So who really, no offense, who cares about their opinion? They're going to come out and they're going to have to make an A-B test. In order to win a presidential election, you have got to bring out these people. And they don't, those things that are seen as negatives by most of us in this business and, you know, the talking heads and the more high participation, high interest voters, that's a positive to those people. So no matter how much you try to sell someone's, you know, record as a governor or whatever it may be, her, for in the case of Nikki Haley, governor and ambassador, they all they see is politician, Jack. And by the way, the Republican Party affirms this suspicion on a daily basis. When they hear about the people, leaders in the Republican Party stabbing Donald Trump in the back, not sticking up for him against the man, what these people see is, you know, the man. Every time they do that, it reaffirms to them that the party can't be trusted and their people can't be trusted. Of course, they know he was president and they view him as a Republican, but he's just a different animal. They see him as something else.
And Rich, And Rich, the very important reason that I bring this up has nothing to do with the Republican primary. It has everything to do with the fact that we should just call it what it is. This is probably Donald Trump's last election, 2024. Regardless of how it goes, he's currently poised to win. All right, all the data tells us he's currently poised to win. But there will be a party and a movement that takes over the party after Trump. And the big fight that I see right now is who is in charge of that. Are we going to have a party that actually represents workers, that represents middle class, that represents the people of this country, or are we going to go back to the same old same? Because the establishment's still there. The establishment still got their money, and they tried to take down Paxton. That didn't go too well for them down in Texas. But they're going to keep trying. Last minute, Rich Barris, where can people go to follow you, get more information, all the data on these polls, because you're the only person that actually releases it?
The best place to go, Jack, is peoplespundit.locals.com. peoplespundit.locals.com. That's where you can find out all the information where, you know, the public polling project, and get it first, by the way. So again, the best place is Locals, peoplespundit.locals.com.
Rich, bottom line, all right, let's say, gun to head, do you think the Democrats stick with Biden, or do they try to parachute Newsom in?
They're in a catch-22, because Joe Biden is still the strongest candidate to run against Trump. And I know it sounds crazy with 60%+ saying he's too old.
Feel.
He's still the strongest. So
that's exactly how I feel.
With
Newsom, you got to start at zero. But that being said, there's clearly something going on now, right? Right. There's clear. They got some guy. Newsom is going to debate DeSantis. What a ridiculous, ridiculous farce. All right, we've got some more coming up next. Gavin Wax here at Human Events Daily.
Buzzing in my ear about the boring people at your office. I'm trying to listen to the new Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
Obviously, it's extremely upsetting that this happened. The speaker has acknowledged his mistake. And has apologized, but this is something that is deeply embarrassing to the Parliament of Canada and, by extension, to all Canadians. I think particularly of Jewish MPs and all members of the Jewish community across the country who are commemorating Yom Kippur today. I think it's going to be really important that all of us push back against Russian propaganda, Russian disinformation, and continue our steadfast and unequivocal support for Ukraine, as we did last week with announcing further measures to stand with Ukraine in Russia's illegal war against it.
So that's Justin Trudeau, who's crying right there up in Ottawa. We're very sorry that we praised the Waffen-SS on Yom Kippur. Great job. Great job, Justin Trudeau. Great job, Zelensky. But this is, I think, bigger than that. Of course, he lies and he talks about Russian propaganda. He says, I had nothing to do with this. It was somebody else's fault, etc. I wanted to bring Gavin Wax on to respond to this because, Gavin, we haven't, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we haven't seen a comment from the ADL. We haven't seen a statement. Greenblatt's not running around. We haven't seen a report of, you know, the research about this. Just complete radio silence from the ADL, where you'd think that this would be possibly, I don't know, something that the ADL would want to comment on.
Yeah, absolutely, Jack. And we've seen the exact opposite. We've seen a scrubbing of the ADL website with all references to the Azov Battalion being a neo-Nazi military unit based in Ukraine. This is all out of this kind of hypocritical convenience. Nazis of yesterday are now whitewashed and cleansed of their past sins because they may be useful in the current geopolitical struggle against Russia. I mean, anyone who has studied history or knows basic history knows that if you were a so-called Ukrainian partisan between 1941 and 1945, you were most likely a Nazi collaborator. You were most likely working with the Waffen-SS as the individual who was welcomed into the Canadian Parliament was. This is a nationalism in Ukraine that is rooted in the ideas of Stefan Bandera. This is an individual who and his supporters who killed killed and massacred Jews across Ukraine, even their fellow Slavs. They killed and massacred Poles across Ukraine. This is a movement that should be repulsive to any supposed liberal in Canada or elsewhere. But obviously, for the day and age, the real boogeyman is Russia, is Putin. And if you're anti-Russia and Putin, they will excuse all past sins, and the ADL will be completely silent as this goes on.
Well, and it seems to me like this is one of those exceptions that proves the rule, because there was a whole controversy over the ADL, and Elon Musk calls them out a couple. It's like, what, like 2 weeks ago, we just had this entire news cycle and they want us to forget about it because they started claiming that you can't put ads on X.com, or I call it Twitter by X now, because of the rise of extremism. And yet these reports can't actually seem to pin down anything, or it's these like low-level accounts that get no traction or engagement that you have to actually go search and find, versus we've got the Parliament of Canada actually doing something like this, but Greenblatt, who himself was an Obama staffer, has no problem with this whatsoever.
Yeah, the ADL is a completely politicized institution. Some would argue it's always been a politicized institution. They claim to be fighting against defamation. They are the biggest, you know, spreaders of defamation against many, particularly conservative Americans, right-wing leaning Americans, accusing them baselessly of anti-Semitism. They've accused, you know, American Jews of being anti-Semitic even, because they don't toe the left-wing dogma that the ADL does, which is really their religion. It's not they don't practice Judaism. These are not people that are, you know, going to shul or anything like that. These are guys whose religion through and through is left-wing American secularism. And they're using the veneer of anti-Semitism to stamp out political opponents. That's all the ADL is. It's a pressure group. It's a left-wing pressure group masquerading as a civil rights organization. And their silence on the overt and blatant Nazism that is very pervasive in the Ukrainian regime, with the Azov Battalion, and then even historically with some of these, you know, these former Nazi collaborators who are now in Canada or wherever else, it just goes to show that they are going to pick and choose. They will go after someone for making a harmless joke. They will go after someone because they brush shoulders with someone who may have said something wrong, but they will completely ignore out and out Nazis because those individuals happen to be beneficial for their worldview at the present. So it's all convenience. None of it is based on any real principles or guiding principles. It's all based on what is convenient politically for the neoliberal world agenda. And that's what the ADL advocates for first and foremost.
And Gavin, to me, it strikes me as completely Orwellian. And I use the line, you know, we've always been at war with East Asia earlier in the program, because here you have a group, the Waffen-SS, okay, not good guys, to put it bluntly, for everyone out there. And the Waffen-SS recruited volunteer regiments in almost all of their occupied areas to fight as the German army was growing, although notably, and I will always say this every time we have the discussion, that Poland did not field a Waffen-SS volunteer division because no Poles were willing to do so, were willing to join. But of course, and then people will try to whitewash it and say, well, you know, the Ukrainians were trying to fight for a Ukrainian homeland, and you had people who were against the Russians, and so they fought against the Soviets. But Gavin, here's the real point here. Why is it that it's so important to whitewash not only the previous history, but also the current battalion and the current extreme ideologies that we can find on the ground in Ukraine?
The Western powers, the Western elites, they see this sort of nationalism in Ukraine, even if it is extremely Nazi sympathetic, as a useful tool. They see them as sort of the useful idiots, the cannon fodder who will, you know, charge Russian positions and get decimated day in, day out with all these failed offenses and counteroffenses and whatever else. So right now it's just pure convenience. It's pure realpolitik. They see these Ukrainian nationalists, many of whom are complete neo-Nazis through and through, from their insignia to their symbols to their ideology to their rhetoric. I mean, these were all neo-Nazi, you know, street thugs from Kiev that they recruited. They put them into these you know, ragtag militias back in 2014. Now they've become a wholesale part of the Ukrainian armed forces. And this is who these are the types of groups that American taxpayer funds and NATO funds are going to support. We are literally funding and giving arms to neo-Nazis simply because they happen to be fighting the Russians, and we have a fixation on Russia that dates back to the Cold War and the Pentagon and the State Department's refusal to move beyond this sort of Cold War mindset in terms of our geopolitical agenda. So it's really all very sick. It's very twisted. Again, none of it is based on any principle. None of it is based on actually fighting for freedom or for civil rights or fighting against anti-Semitism, because as we're explaining very clearly right now on this segment, they are happy to support some of the worst and most egregious anti-Semites, literal out-and-out Nazis, if it means that it advances their agenda. Likewise, they have no problem defaming, you know, plenty of, you know, constitution-loving, you know, American conservatives who have no anti-Semitic views. They're happy to label them as Nazis, as neo-Nazis, get them canceled, get them doxxed, have them lose their income, etc., because they pose a threat to the political system in the U.S. So this is really the state of affairs in the Western world writ large. It's sad. It's you know, it's hard not to be cynical, but here we are.
Well, you know, and it's amazing, too, because people say, well, the U.S. would never fund a group like that. And I say, really? Wait until you find out who we've been giving money to in the Middle East. Wait, remember the moderate jihadis that we found? And we suddenly, Brennan was saying, let's give all this money. The Free Syrian Army, they're definitely not former Al-Qaeda members that are taking the money and the Toyota Hiluxes and the man pads and then using them to create their own splinter group that they're calling the Islamic State. Oh, wait, no, that's actually exactly what happened under Operation Timber Sycamore until Donald Trump came in 2017 and shut it off. This is one of the reasons, and again, we're going to a break here in a minute, but I want to hold you over. This is one of the reasons that Trump represents such a threat to the neoliberal global order, because he calls this stuff out. Does he get into all the details? No, I'm not going to say that he sits there and pays attention to all little details, but he'll say, no, no money for jihadis. Don't ship the weapons over there. We don't know who these groups are. How about instead of trying to monkey around in the business of other countries, we sit with our people at home and we make deals to ensure peace. Peace within 24 hours, peace in Syria, the Middle East, get Israel and the Arabs to sit down. Sounds crazy, right? The man actually did it. That's what we're talking about. North and South Korea did the exact same thing, went over himself into North Korea. Stay tuned. We'll come back more. Gavin Wax.
I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here, Human Events Daily. We're live with Gavin Wax. But Gavin, I have a question for you about another Gavin, because we just got the news, and it only broke a few minutes before we came to air today, that there had been this talk about a debate between Ron DeSantis and the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Apparently, they were going back and forth about the requirements and the considerations, et cetera, about whether it was going to happen. Sounds like they've actually set that aside, and they're moving ahead with it, and it's going to take place, we're told now, on November 30th on the flagship nightly news show of neoconservatism known as the Sean Hannity Show. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you really think that they are so terrified of Trump that they want to switch Biden out with Gavin Newsom? And we are give me your quick answer, because we actually have to cut because Trump is actually speaking in South Carolina and Rav is going to pick this up. Give me a quick 30 seconds.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll say this very quickly about the other Gavin with equally great hair and a great name but horrible politics. I think they definitely would love to swap him in, do a quick switcheroo. They see him as charismatic. He has the look. He has the presidential look. Clean cut guy. This is a guy whose original political career started out very moderate. You know, he ran on the Republican line when he ran for city council in San Francisco. So they're hoping that they could kind of drag these old moderate credentials that he may have had 20, 30 years ago, bring it to the forefront and present him.
Do you think it's a good move for Ron DeSantis to be entering into this debate with him?
I think Ron DeSantis is going to do anything he can do right now to get attention, to elevate his profile. I think he's desperate. I don't think this is going to help him move numbers in any way. I think, if anything, the Unit Party would love this to be the race. They would love to, for it to be DeSantis versus Newsom. And they're probably more trying to see, test the waters with Newsom more than anything. But I think head-to-head, I think, you know, the charm and charisma of a Gavin Newsom may outweigh kind of the kind of reserved persona that is Ron DeSantis, which has been hurting him on the campaign trail. So we're going to have to see how it unfolds. But, yeah, they're definitely desperate, ultimately.
No, I don't think it's a move you do out of strength. I think it's a move you do when nothing else is shaking the numbers, and so you're throwing a Hail Mary. Gavin Wax, thank you so much for joining us. Apologize for cutting it short, but we're cutting it short for a good reason, because the next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, is taking the stage in South Carolina. Next to you and defend her still today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Wow. Thank you very much. What a crowd. Nice votes, by the way. It's great to be back in this incredible state with the hardworking, God-fearing patriots who make our country run. You love our country, you make it run. And it's a true honor to be here at Sportsman's Boats. We just took a tour and they are beautiful boats. I think I might have to order one, Henry. I don't know. Over the past 12 years, Sportsman has become one of the most respected names in the industry. And as I saw just moments ago, every single inch of these beautiful boats is designed and built right here in South Carolina by very skilled South Carolina hands. I know what that means, and proud South Carolina hearts. I want to thank Sportsman's owners, Tommy Hancock and Brinkley Melvin, as well as the CEO of South Carolina Boating and Fishing Alliance, Geddes Brannon, not Bandon. Geddes Brannon, you know who that is. Thanks also to your great governor. This is a great governor. He kept this place open. But he really kept it open. He didn't, you know, say, he kept it open. Henry McMaster and Peggy, thank you so much for being here. These are, it's a great couple. They're great people. What a great governor he's been. It was one of the reasons I got her out of here, so I could make him governor of the state. You know, I never said that. That was a big deal. Let her move and look at Henry there. And people are very happy about it. Henry, great. You know, Henry was with me right from the beginning of the campaign, early on. I thought she'd be with me, but she went a different way. And I said, wow, that's unusual. And he was there. And then we won in a landslide. And I said, I'll take Henry any day. I'll take Henry any day. And we got him in. Henry, you're doing a great job as governor. Thank you very much. Another man who's always there. He's always, I'll tell you what, when I need help on the left, he's great. He's great. And he's my friend, too. Lindsey Graham, wherever you are. Lindsey, thank you. Oh, no. He helps me on the left. We need help sometimes. Republicans shouldn't need help on the left, but he helps me. Also, somebody I think you love, and I love him. I remember a burst of real anger and heart years ago in Congress. I'm sure nobody remembers that. Representative Joe Wilson. Joe, thank you. They went after him for that. He didn't realize even at the time how popular that made you, Joe. You were only telling the truth. And somebody who I'm so proud of, he came in and we came in together in a way because I said, this is a guy that's going to be fantastic as a congressman. Russell Fry. Russell, thank you, Russell. Thank you. And a friend of mine and a great congresswoman, she's done a job like few others, and she has courage, the courage of her conviction. And she takes a lot of, she said, yes, she has, and she does. She takes a lot of heat sometimes, but she ends up always being right. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie, thank you. Thank you very much. Great job. And another friend of mine who's done fantastically in the campaign, she's campaigning as hard as I am. She wants to see a big victory in South Carolina for us. Lieutenant Governor Pam Evatt. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Pam. And Treasurer Curtis Loftus. Thank you very much. My Ambassador Curtis. Thank you very much. My Ambassador, who really was a good job. I won't tell you which country, but I sent him to a country where they have the greatest desserts in history. And this was not a good thing to do to Ed McMullen. This was not good. Stand up, Ed. Show him how slim you are. See that? This was not a good thing, but that's okay. And today I'm honored to receive the endorsements of your Attorney General, Alan Wilson. Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. That's a big endorsement. That's a big endorsement. And your Secretary of State, Mark Hammond. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it. I'm also delighted to announce that your Lieutenant Governor will be heading up the launch of our brand new coalition, Small Business Leaders for Trump. Thank you. Thank you very much. Great. With your help, we're going to win the South Carolina primary by a lot. We're up by about 50 points, but we don't want to take it for granted. Henry said, never take anything for granted, right? But we're going to win that primary big. You know, we won the state twice by record numbers, literally record numbers, and we're going to do it again. We did phenomenally here. We've always done well here, and we're going to do it at a level that nobody's ever seen. So we broke the record twice. We're going to break it a third time. We're going to break our own record. So less than 5 months from now, we're going to defeat crooked Joe Biden. We're going to take back our country, and we're going to make America great again. So we've come today to the perfect place to talk about how we're going to end the economic catastrophe known as Bidenomics. You know, he thought that was a good. It was meant to be bad. It was originally done in the financial pages to talk about how bad it was. And he said, oh, I love the name. I love the name. So now he goes around and he talks about it like it's good. It's really bad. And I spoke to the incredible owners of Sportsman, and they were telling me, so different now than it was just 3 years ago. Sportsman and other boat builders across the state exemplify the American manufacturing muscle. Incredible how big a boat business it is in this state that will help turn the Biden economic bust into another Trump economic boom. That's what you had. You had the greatest boom in history, most successful economy in history. Under my leadership, we built the greatest economy in the history of the world. In fact, we did it twice, if you remember. We had to do it twice, and now we're going to do it a third time, but it's going to be bigger, better, stronger than ever before. Ever before. But we had the greatest economy in the history, really, of the world. And then COVID came in, and we had to do it again, and we did a great job with COVID. Nobody knew what the hell it was. And we did a great job, and then we handed it over. After a horrible, horrible, we got many millions of more votes. I was told if you got the same number, 63 million, you win easily. And we got millions and millions more. We got the most votes of any sitting president in history. And they say we lost the election. I don't think so. Terrible, terrible. What's going on between bad elections and open borders? What's going on in our country? And that's almost the least of it. You could go through point after point. There's nothing good happening. In 4 short years, we passed the largest tax cuts and reforms in American history. We cut more job-killing regulations, your boat companies and every other company would tell you that, than any administration in history. Broke every record. We slashed the price of gasoline.